this morning we're going to take our scripture reading from Deuteronomy chapter 1. We'll do that probably in a minute or two. But the book of Deuteronomy takes a lot of commitment to read through. Because it's not the most exciting book in the Bible. And a lot of people would only spend time reading through the book of Deuteronomy if they are reading through a Bible reading plan, like covering it from beginning to end, or they've got a set plan, and then that plan directs you to the book of Deuteronomy. And for some reason, for some people, Deuteronomy sometimes seems redundant. I mean, after all, the name of the book gives it away pretty much. Deutero meaning second, nomos meaning law. It's the second time that the law is being given. Now, if you go and read in Deuteronomy, you'll find the Ten Commandments again. And the first time we find it in Scripture is in Exodus. And a lot of things that we read about in Deuteronomy, we have already read about in Exodus and even in Leviticus. So, essentially, Deuteronomy is the second time the Ten Commandments is given. It's the second time a lot of actual events is described. And so, for a lot of people, Deuteronomy, even though it might be boring for some, it seems to be less important, for some even redundant. But then, oftentimes, some of the less frequented parts of Scripture is quite important. So, we miss out if we don't read that. So, today, we will read from it. And this is only the second time that I've been preaching in Wingham on the book of Deuteronomy. The first time was, I think, last year, September, about God telling his people to go and pick a fight. And then they sent a peace offering instead, which was just, I think, from chapter 2. Anyways, so I don't even preach a lot from the book of Deuteronomy, and maybe we should. So we're going to take our scripture reading from Deuteronomy chapter 1, verses 1 to 8. Now, something that actually makes it quite interesting, the book of Deuteronomy, is that the whole book of Deuteronomy is a speech by Moses delivered to God's people. So if you take the time to read through Deuteronomy, as long as it takes you to read through it, that's about how long the speech was. It was a speech that Moses delivered. Whereas most of the books in the Bible would be written over time or give an account of things that happened over time. This is a speech. It's got a little intro of 5 verses saying this and that's going to be the speech of Moses. And then it's got a last chapter where it ends with, since then no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, who did all those signs and wonders the Lord sent me to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his officials and to his whole land. For no one has ever shown the mighty power or performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all Israel. And there's just a few verses saying that then Joshua took over from Moses. So up till this part in the very last chapter, from verse 6 in the first chapter, is a speech by Moses given to God's people. So let's take the scripture reading from verse 1 to 8 then. These are the words Moses spoke to all Israel in the wilderness east of the Jordan, that is in the Arabah opposite Suf, between Paran and Tophel, Laban, Hazaroth and Dizahab. It takes 11 days to go from Horeb to Kadesh Barnea by the Mount Seir road. In the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month, Moses proclaimed to the Israelites all that the Lord had commanded him concerning them. So, right at the end of the 40 years in the desert, this was after he had defeated Sihon, king of the Amorites, who reigned in Heshbon, and at Edrei had defeated Og, king of Bashan, who reigned in Ashtaroth. East of the Jordan, in the territory of Moab, Moses began to expound the law, saying, the Lord our God said to us at Horeb, you have stayed long enough at this mountain. Break camp and advance into the hill country of the Amorites. Go to all the neighboring people in the Arabah, in the mountains, in the western foothills, in the Negev and along the coast, to the land of the Canaanites and to Lebanon, as far as the great river, the Euphrates. See, I've given you this land. Go in and take possession of the land the Lord swore he would give to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and to their descendants after them. A lot of geographical information in there. Now, as I said, Deuteronomy is quite interesting because the whole thing is a speech by Moses delivered to God's people just before they entered the promised land. And something that adds to making this book interesting is the fact that Moses is the oldest person around. He's the oldest person that the Israelites would spend time with. At the time of his death, Moses was 120 years old, and he died shortly after the speech. He was 120 years old. Before they conquered the promised land, all the Israelites that came out of Egypt had already died. So anybody that could have been peers of Moses, all his friends, and anybody that's younger than him, probably to about 40 years of age, would have been dead. So the second oldest guy amongst the people of God would have been almost 40 years old. Because God said, "You will, nobody that have come out of Egypt will go into the promised land." We'll get into that in a bit. So that age bracket between 40 and 120 years old, everybody in that bracket would have died before they conquered the promised land. So Moses is by far the oldest guy around, and he's delivering this speech to them then. Now, when reading through the book of Deuteronomy, we feel as if we've read or heard all these things before, as I said, in Exodus and Leviticus. But the Israelites listening to this now, as Moses is delivering this narrative, they weren't the ones that went through all of these things that Moses is describing to them. They were never in Egypt. The audience, none of them were in Egypt. They haven't seen the 10 plagues that God brought on Pharaoh. They didn't see it. They might have heard some anecdotes from their parents, every now and then heard something about it, but they weren't there. They didn't see the parted waters of the Red Sea. They didn't see those Egyptian soldiers, the expressions on their faces when the water rushed back and they drowned. They weren't there. They have only been born in the desert. So they know nothing else than the desert. And then just before Moses starts delivering his magnus opus, his great big speech, we find this little note in the introduction. It takes 11 days to go from Horeb to Kadesh Barnea by the Mount Seir road. And it seems quite insignificant because it's all this geographical information about places that we struggle to pronounce. And then there's another little bit of geographical information. It takes 11 days from point A to point B. Why is this significant? It takes 11 days from Mount Sinai, also called Mount Horeb, the mountain of the Lord, the starting point of the desert journey, to get to Kadesh Barnea, the last stopover in the desert before crossing the River Jordan into the promised land. Once again, without getting wet. But they didn't know it at this time. So the starting point of the desert journey is Mount Sinai or Mount Horeb. And the last stop, just before they crossed over and conquered the promised land, is Kadesh Barnea. And a journey from the start of the desert journey to the end of the desert journey, the normal journey time for that would be 11 days. And at this stage, when Moses is delivering this speech, they are in the last month to make it a full 40 years that they've been in that desert. They could have been in that desert for 11 days instead of 40 years. It's only an 11-day journey. They spent 40 years in that desert. Why did they get lost? There was no GPS at that time. So maybe, did they get lost? Maybe if we have a quick look at Numbers 14, verses 11 to 23, we will be reminded about why they spent so much time in the desert. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people," that is God's own people, Israel, "how long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me, in spite of all the signs I have performed among them? I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them, but I will make you into a nation greater and stronger than they." Moses said to the Lord, "Then the Egyptians will hear about it. By your power, you brought these people up from among them. And they will tell the inhabitants of this land about it. They have already heard that you, Lord, are with these people, and that you, Lord, have been seen face to face, that your cloud stays over them, and that you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Now, if you put all these people to death," God's people, Israel, "leaving none alive, the nations who have heard this report about you will say, 'The Lord was not able to bring these people into the land he promised them on oath. So he slaughtered them in the wilderness.' Now may the Lord's strength be displayed, just as you have declared, 'The Lord is slow to anger, abounding in love and forgiving sin and rebellion. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation. In accordance with your great love, forgive the sin of these people, just as you have pardoned them from the time they left Egypt until now." Should have said all the time since they left Egypt, because God regularly had to pardon them. The Lord replied, "I have forgiven them as you asked. Nevertheless, as surely as I live, and as surely as the glory of the Lord fills the whole earth, not one of those who saw my glory and the signs I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, but who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, not one of them will ever see the land I promised on oath to their ancestors. No one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it." They weren't even going to see the promised land. Moses got to see it, but he also didn't get to go into the promised land. And that was his punishment for disobeying God. But he got to see it. And he was good with that. Because he knew it was his punishment, but he got to see it. Now, God asks, "How long will they refuse to believe in me, trust me, in spite of all the signs I have performed amongst them?" In verse 11 of Numbers 24. How long will they refuse to trust me, in spite of everything they've seen? So no, they didn't get lost in the desert. They didn't get lost on the journey that should have taken them 11 days. The problem was this. They just couldn't see God's plan for them anymore. They couldn't see that dream that God had for his people anymore. It seemed too far to reach. The plan that God gave them and the plan that they were familiar with. Because they knew that this was a promise that God gave them. "I will take you to this promised land." They did know that there was a new home country waiting for them. A land of great potential. A land of great opportunity. But they couldn't picture themselves in it. Too many things had to come together for this plan of God to come into existence. And they weren't feeling it. They couldn't see themselves within this great plan of God. There were just too many things. The people of Canaan were just too big. They were giants, some of the spies said. There were enemies along the route. There was just too many things that had to fall into place for them to see themselves in this plan of God. So they plainly refused to accept God's plan for them. They refused to pursue God's plan for them. And it's both of these two things. They refused to accept it, and in turn they refused to pursue this plan that God had. So they just kept on complaining. They rebelled against God constantly. They made their own plans, different from God's plans. They even tried making their own God with a golden calf. And this is the same people that actually saw God's power. They saw him bringing down these plagues on Pharaoh. They saw the waters of the Red Sea parting. They went through it. They saw the waters gushing back behind them. They heard the screams of the Egyptians following them as they were washed away and drowned. But for some reason, they just had enough of God's plans. The promised land wasn't their promised land anymore. It became someone else's dream, their descendants' dream. For some reason, they just couldn't see themselves in God's plan anymore. Even though God constantly demonstrated his power, he was providing food for them daily. Manna raining down on them. The first time, they were, wow. After a few years, they were complaining, oh, manna again. But it's so extraordinary, manna raining down from heaven. The quails coming down for the meat. The pillar of smoke going in front of them. The pillar of fire staying in front of them. How could they not see God's power anymore? They just got used to it. And they couldn't see themselves in God's dream anymore. And because they bluntly refused to pursue God's dream for them, an 11-day journey became a 14,610-day journey. That's a big difference. Is it possible that God could get upset with us? When he make these unfathomable great plans, these plans for us to prosper, not to harm us in any way, and then we turn around and choose something else, something not nearly as good. Does it happen that when we then turn to God, after not accepting his plan, we turn to God and bemoan the situation we find ourselves in. Turn around and then sometimes blame God for the situations we find ourselves in. When clearly God has directed us in a complete different direction. Is it possible that we sometimes opt for the 40 years journey on 11-day paths? The God of Israel once told his beloved Israel, you know what? That's enough. You don't want to trust me. You don't want to trust my plans. You don't want to trust that my plans are not plans to harm you, but rather to lift you up, to see you flourish. So the God of Israel once told his beloved Israel, okay then, you will never experience this great plan of within. May this never be necessary for us. May God never have to tell us, you know what, that's enough. You don't want to trust me. You don't want to trust my plans. You don't want to trust that my plans are to see you flourish. May God never have to tell us, okay then, you will never experience this great plan I have for you. Can we honestly say, when taking stock of our own journeys, can we honestly say that we are taking the shortcut, the short route, the 11-day journey? Can we honestly say that we are taking the path, the journey that God planned, the one God dreamed up just for you? I really hope so. I really hope so. And if that's not the case, maybe we should consider to recalibrate our course, to get onto the shorter course, the shorter path, God's path. Or would you rather opt for spending 40 years in the desert instead of just 11 days? Because that is a possibility. That's what happened to God's people. They chose a different way. It took them 40 years instead of 11 days. May we take that shortcut that God has planned. Let's close our eyes in prayer. Well, thank you so much.